Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Spencer Chase. Our guest this week is Kansas Republican Jerry Moran, who joins us to chat about government funding, sustainable aviation fuel, and more. But first, here's this week's headlines. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack announced $200 million worth of loans and grants aimed at helping fertilizer production and renewable energy. The investments were made from the Rural Energy for America program and the Fertilizer Production Expansion Program. More than 680 projects in 42 states are included. Vilsack made the announcement at the American Farm Bureau Federation's annual convention and told Farm Bureau members USDA has found another 50 fertilizer projects yet to be funded. Vilsack was also in Georgia this week for the grand opening of a sustainable aviation fuel facility. The LanzaJet Freedom Pines fuel facility is the world's first plant converting ethanol to sustainable aviation fuel. According to LanzaJet, the plant will produce 9 million gallons of SAF in its first year of operations. And finally, lawmakers are considering a tax deal that could set up a fight over a range of expiring tax cuts. For agriculture, the deal includes the restoration of 100% bonus depreciation and the Section 179 tax break used by farmers for equipment. Those two are among many Tax Cuts and Jobs Act provisions set to expire in 2025. The package also includes an extension of the child tax credit, a major priority for Democrats. The bill has an uncertain path forward and is among many issues facing a limited election year calendar on Capitol Hill. Senator Jerry Moran says he hopes lawmakers can avoid unfinished business, particularly on the upcoming government funding deadline.
Nothing is easy in Congress, certainly nothing is easy in the House, and the Senate has its challenges as well. But there are a number of us who want to try to get results, to do something to advance a cause, even though we may not get exactly everything we want. There's some give and take that needs to take place. And I would say that front and center for us at the moment is this emergency supplemental that deals with Ukraine, Israel, South China Sea, our national security, and at our insistence, including mine, we're requiring that for those dollars to be spent, that we also need to take care of the national security problem on our borders, particularly the southern border. And everything that I know tells me that there's close to an agreement, but I've been in lots of deals in the United States Senate where I would say we're this close and it doesn't happen. So we'll see, but in this case, I think there's a path forward. And it's a time in which the kind of things that many of us have wanted to do on our border, on our borders, is achievable because the White House and therefore the Democrats in the Senate are willing to negotiate to get something for Ukraine in particular that might not otherwise happen.
So that those discussions that are ongoing right now, can you look into that famous Senator Moran crystal ball and tell me, is that going to put a bill on President Biden's desk? I mean, what obstacles have to be overcome to get to that point?
Well, I suppose when I say I'm optimistic, I would say I'm optimistic that the Senate could get there. It becomes more challenging. The House has a new speaker. He has tremendous difficulties in managing a very difficult set of members across the spectrum in the House. And I think from my perspective, the Senate ought to accomplish the best deal it can get and then let the House decide whether it's good enough for them. If it goes beyond next week, then I think it's a real problem. And as soon as we get that completed, we need to move forward on appropriation bills, including the Department of Agriculture's appropriation bill. I'm opposed to a CR, a continuing resolution that just funds the government the same way it was last year, which means generally the year before and the year before. We don't get to prioritize things we ought not spend so much money on, we continue to spend money on. And I'm totally opposed to an omnibus spending bill in which we just lump everything, throw it all together and send it to the Senate floor, where even me as an appropriator finds it really difficult for me and my staff to know what's in there.
One thing we haven't talked too much about yet is tax policy. And of course, we do see a bill moving through the House, big bipartisan vote in the Ways and Means Committee on an agreement between Chairman Smith and Chairman Wyden. What appetite do you sense in the Senate to consider that legislation?
I've tried to figure that out because, I mean, a problem or an opportunity, for my world, it's an opportunity, but because it's everybody's opportunity, it becomes a problem. We all keep waiting for a, an, a tax bill to appear so that we can take care of issues that we care about. Some of them very modest and minor changes in the law, and some of them more major. And if you get a tax bill on the floor, everybody wants to have their opportunity to amend it. My impression, I'm telling you that I've been trying to figure this out, is this a real deal? I'm not so sure there's any significant enthusiasm in the Senate. And part of this issue is that Mike Crapo from Idaho, the senator from Idaho, who's the ranking Republican on the Finance Committee, this wasn't a deal that he was involved in. So I think it takes a lot of catch up for members of the Senate to get comfortable knowing that it was negotiated by a House member and one senator who's the chairman of the Finance Committee, but really nobody else was included. And so there's some skepticism about what's in here and some debate about the nature of the child tax credit that's the bulk or the significant core of that agreement.
We'll have more from Senator Moran right after this.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahe build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Welcome back. Senator Jerry Moran introduced legislation this week that he says would be beneficial for the future of sustainable aviation fuel, something he says will be critical for American agriculture.
The airlines are looking for renewable fuels in the jet fuel that they use to fly planes. And we have an administration that is pushing these climate goals. And we want to make certain that the Department of Agriculture, USDA, has the tools necessary to include renewable jet fuel, so to speak, as part of their renewable fuel platform, their agenda at USDA. And there is some doubt about it at USDA whether they have that today. And so we want to give them that authority. And in my world, what this means, and in some ways to me, it's as many issues are, a Kansas issue. We're the air capital of the world. We manufacture lots of airplanes, including planes that fly all the time everywhere, and a lot of general aviation airplanes. And we also have lots of opportunities for commodities to be utilized in renewable fuels. So it's trying to combine the two, use the expertise that we have in Kansas in aviation with the expertise we have in agriculture to put something together that is a potentially significant new market in the renewable fuels world.
You and several other senators this week introduced the Farm to Fly legislation. What can you tell us about why that bill is necessary?
Well, in part because USDA, it seemingly wants to move in this direction, but they'd like to have some congressional cover when they have those conversations. And so this is that bill, but it also changes some definitions that make it more easy to qualify for USDA programs that already exist. And it creates the research necessary for us to make certain that all commodities, not just one or two of the commodities that are thought of as renewable fuels, have an opportunity to participate in SAF, the renewable fuels for aviation.
I want to wrap up on the Farm Bill. I know this is obviously a big priority for farm groups and for ag legislators like you, but I wonder kind of from an outside viewpoint as an appropriator, not necessarily an authorizer in this case, what do you sense in terms of a willingness to get some kind of final agreement on the funding issue, which really seems to be what's practically holding up the bill at this point?
Spencer, I'm really up to date on this issue. I answer this question all the time with Kansans and farm groups. In fact, before I came to visit with you, the Kansas wheat growers were in the office. This, of course, is front and center for them. They reminded me they've been waiting a long time. This probably is over-optimistic, but I was expecting us to be done about now, and we're not. And I thought in part that's because Debbie Stabenow, the chairman of the Senate Agriculture Committee, and John Bozeman, the ranking Republican, the vice chairman of the committee, were could work so well together, and the Democrats in particular would be interested in. This is Chairman Stabenow's last year in Congress. The Democrats, I'm sure, would want to give her kind of this legacy of having a Stabenow farm bill. And I think that goodwill still exists. But I've seen some things where Senator Stabenow has talked about crop insurance that are it's terribly troubling to me. And it seemingly is suggesting that there has to be a choice between Title I of the Farm Bill and receiving benefits under crop insurance. Those two things should not be mutually exclusive. One is a product that's purchased. One is a safety net that comes to all farmers or most farmers in the Farm Bill. That's troublesome to me. And I think probably the greatest difficulty is just where are the dollars coming from? How much is the leadership of the Senate, how much of the White House and budget issues are going to determine how much money we have to spend? And yet the Senate Agriculture Committee still says we're going to have this done before the August recess, now 7 months away. And the goal and the plan is to have it in place by the beginning of the new fiscal year. That'd be great, certainly better than another extension.
Certainly something for us to keep an eye on. Senator Brand, thanks for joining us.
I'm pleased to be with you, Spencer. Thanks.
We'll be right back to hear from this week's panel. But first, our Hannah Pegel walks us through what producers are telling us about the next farm bill.
Commodity and nutrition programs get a lot of attention, but producers tell us trade is the top issue for them in the upcoming farm bill. An exclusive AgriPulse poll surveyed more than 600 producers, and this chart shows the topics they believe will be the most important in the next farm bill. 61% of respondents were Republican, while 10% were Democrats and 18% were independents. The top three answers were trade with 72%, commodities with 61%, and crop insurance with 58%. Disaster assistance and farm credit rounded out the top five. Only 22% of our respondents flagged nutrition programs. Our survey also showed 48% of people supported the last farm bill, while 16% disapprove and 36% have no opinion. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pagel.
Did you know AgriPulse has all your favorite podcasts, including Open Mic, Newsmakers, and Drive Time? Take us wherever you go. Subscribe at AgriPulse.com or on Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
At our family farm, we grow rice, corn, and soybeans. And digital tools are as important to us as tractors and combines. In the 30 years I've been farming, technology has transformed agriculture. But some in Washington want to stifle these technologies and empower our foreign adversaries to leap ahead of us in the tech race. Protecting our competitive edge will strengthen our economic, national, and food security. Our leaders need to support American agriculture by strengthening our technology.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers for a panel discussion on the big issues of this week. Joined for that conversation by Alexa Kombelik with the American Soybean Association and Jim Richards with Cornerstone Government Affairs. Appreciate both of you taking the time. And Jim, I'm going to go to you first here with a question on the appropriations process. It seems like it's been what we've been talking about on this program for quite a while now. But I do wonder, we've seen some level of agreement on top line figures. We've seen a new deadline for the FY24 process. In your mind, what are the big issues left to resolve in the appropriations process?
I don't think we have enough time to talk about the issues left to resolve to complete out FY24 when we're halfway through the fiscal year. As you mentioned, Speaker Johnson and the White House and Leader Schumer and their minority counterparts got an agreement a couple weeks ago to pass another continuing resolution through the beginning of March, which basically has two bifurcated expiration dates for 4 and 8 of the bills that comprise the annual spending and appropriations process, which includes the agriculture appropriations bill, which may be one of the more difficult ones to reconcile. The subcommittees have to have their allocations, what they're given to spend out of that top line agreement, in order for them to individually reconcile their bills. They're doing a bunch of what we call clearing the underbrush right now, But as of this morning, the subcommittees do not have that top line number for their individual subcommittee, which agriculture, for example, the Senate and the House agriculture appropriations bills were almost $3 billion apart, which is big money anywhere. And it's particularly a large difference in the agriculture appropriation space.
Well, and there seems to still be this desire, and there has been throughout the appropriations process, to move individual bills rather than in a big omnibus spending package. But, you know, here we sit approaching the tail end of January. March is not that far away, especially in the grand scheme of legislative days. Is moving individual bills practical at this point?
We're past that point in the process. The House moved 8 of the 12 appropriations bills last year. It was a partisan process on both sides. The Senate moved one package of 4. At this time of the game, the only thing you can do is an omnibus, which is when you wrap all 12 of those bills and ultimately a lot of extraneous matters that were unresolved that have to take a ride on that package into a single package omnibus, or you could have a couple of what we call a mini bus this year and a fairly large bus to roll them up.
Alexa, I want to shift gears and bring you into the fold here, because we did see some figures released this week just detailing the biomass-based diesel production that took place in 2023, and that was came in over and above the levels that were set by the Environmental Protection Agency through the Renewable Fuel Standard. So with those RFS levels set now through 2025 in a multi-year rulemaking, how does the industry go about increasing future targets and still encouraging production beyond the levels set by the government?
Yeah, Spencer, I think the numbers that we saw released in terms of production in 2023 really matched what the industry was telling the EPA before the set rule came out, that we were going to see this great increase in production, 1 billion gallons over the previous year. And as you know, the gallons that were increased in that set rule was only 60 million gallons for 2023. So a huge disparity between actual production and where those RVOs were set. And so, you know, I think hopefully continues to be enough demand out there to see this industry continue to grow. I know, with sustainable aviation fuel and other fuels on the horizon, there will be continued increased production in growing markets. But those numbers there in the RVO just don't match. So there will continue to be this disparity in the RIN market.
We'll have more from our panel right after this.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Welcome back. Alexa Kombelik with the American Soybean Association says sustainable aviation fuel holds big promise for American agriculture, but some things still need to be determined.
Right now, there is a pathway for agricultural feedstocks that are eligible through the Renewable Fuel Standard. They would come in at that 50% carbon reduction threshold, and it wouldn't increase past there. So having a GREET model that really works for agriculture and can allow agriculture to realize those carbon reduction increases and provide them with a better tax credit is really important. Right now, it seems as though the big issues that are left to be determined are how one will verify their climate smart practices on their farms and how that will then move into whatever that CI score is.
We did see this week Senator Moran and a few others on that side of Capitol Hill introduce some farm to fly legislation. Wondering, what do you think practically would be the impacts of that bill should it ultimately make its way to the president's desk?
Sure. So this is just adding some more tools to the toolbox, right? So we have a tax credit now that is sort of in the final stages of implementation. And in addition to that, you're seeing incentives across the country, different state tax credits out in California and other West Coast states, a low carbon fuel standard that is impacting sustainable aviation fuel and creating additional incentives to produce it. What these different programs, this bill would allow for sustainable aviation fuel to be eligible for a number of USDA programs for biofuels. And it just adds a little bit of an additional incentive.
Jim, I want to wrap up the conversation with you and maybe look ahead on Capitol Hill. Assuming, of course, that the FY24 appropriations process will wrap up at some point, whether or not that's early March or if they need to extend that deadline a little bit more obviously remains to be seen. But once that process does wrap up, what do you think is a realistic expectation for Capitol Hill activity, given the fact that it is an election year, going forward?
Oh, well, I would like to provide a really positive, glowing forecast there. But assuming we get FY24 finished up next month, a deep sigh of relief. FY25 process starts immediately. Actually, it's supposed to start with the president's submission the week after next of the FY25 budget request, which is going to be delayed as well. Beyond that, there's a tax package that is agreed to by Chairman Smith and Chairman Wyden that was passed out of the House Ways and Means Committee last week on a 40-2 bipartisan vote. That's probably going to get enacted very close to, if not exactly the way it is, that is passed out of the House. Beyond that, we still are hopeful for a farm bill. The numbers that are driving the challenges on the FY24 process are just as large as the challenges for the farm bill, as Senator Moran just recently alluded to. And then we're going to go into a lame duck Congress, and depending on what happens in November of this year on the presidential and the congressional elections, it could be very productive, or everything could be punted into 2025 to the 119th Congress. So lots of talk and little action is forecast.
Well, and obviously plenty of things to monitor, be they taxes, appropriations, farm bill, SAF, a lot of things going on right now, despite the activity or perhaps lack thereof emanating from Capitol Hill. Alexa, Jim, thanks for joining us. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse newsmakers. But first, our Hannah Pegel walks us through the global trade situation in this week's Map It Out.
The U.S. is projected to have a record agricultural trade deficit in 2024. USDA is projecting American ag exports will total around $169.5 billion, while imports are expected to reach $200 billion, creating a deficit of more than $30 billion. This map shows the country-by-country trade balance with figures from USDA's Foreign Ag Service through its Global Agricultural Trade System. The countries in blue represent where the U.S. has a positive trade balance, and the countries in red represent a negative balance. The U.S. has the biggest deficit with European countries at more than $23 billion. The U.S. is also in the negative with Mexico, Canada, and Brazil. The Asia-Pacific region is much more profitable. There, the U.S. has surpluses of $29 billion with China and $11 billion with Japan. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pagel.
It's not as simple just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next farm bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this farm bill coverage.
Thanks again for tuning in for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week.
USDA's monthly agricultural prices report comes out Wednesday. Also on Wednesday, the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee will hold hearings on capturing, avoiding, and detecting methane emissions from landfills. And finally, I'm headed to the Cattle Industry Convention in Orlando, Florida. Hope to see many of you there. We'll continue to follow the latest in farm policy news at AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Spencer Chase. Have a good one.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit AgriPulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.